All right, here we are, September 16, 2025, Common Sense Ohio, commonsenseohioshow.com. Brett and I are here. Norm had some other obligations he had to attend to. I think we're going to do something a little bit different today. I mean, this is our first time since the horrific Charlie Kirk assassination last week. And we're going to give our take on it. We're going to try to give you a little bit more of a unique take on it here in a bit, the legal breakdown, because some of that just came out last night, what he's charged with, what's going on, and you know, I happen to be a criminal defense lawyer, so I can talk a little bit about
nice perspective on what what we should expect.
What we should expect, and you know, maybe I'll try my best to figure out what I might do. At any rate, there's a couple things we got to talk about first. I mean, first and foremost, we're praying for his family, we're praying for his wife, we're praying really for the country. I mean, I can't think of anything more horrific in my adult life that's happened in the public like this.
Right.
I did my best. I could not think of anything more horrific.
No, and we came close to it with Trump's assassination.
We came very close.
Very close to that. So, yeah, this it's disturbing on all levels that you know that anybody that wants to speak their mind is now a target.
Yeah, and I think
bottom line, that's what it is.
It is, and you know, Charlie Kirk was not a violent guy. Charlie Kirk was not didn't call for violence. Didn't call for anything close to violence, and in fact, would through his Christian values embrace anybody into his fold. If you know, it's horrifically impossible. But I think you know he was one of the look. You're in the space. You're in the podcast space. Mm-hmm. You started in radio. I met you in radio.
Right.
And you know, we don't have a show that's anywhere close to Charlie Kirk's show. But he was a pioneer, one of the guys that sort of really took off and created his own version of media. And was killed for it.
Right. And in some sense, what he was talking about, it had some common sense to a lot of people.
It did. It did.
And you know, whether you liked him or not, there was something there that had morals and values to at least those that he were following him and himself as well, too. He preached what he believed in.
He preached what he believed in. And, you know, he was a pioneer for, like, he was, because of his age, he was young, but he was able to reach out to the youth. And, you know, there's people on the other side saying, well, see, he indoctrinated them all with all this awful politics. But forget about that for a second. And why don't we focus on what he was first, and that was a Christian. And how many people did he reach using his platform to do it? And he almost always, if it didn't start with his faith, it came out fat or very quickly in any of his conversations.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder, and I guess we should shift to this. Like, how does it get to this?
Yeah. And it's so many, you know, ingredients in this recipe, I think. So many. I mean, you could say, first my mind went social media. Just the opportunity for this, at that time, the attempted, you know, the guy, you know, that's been accused of just having the ability to hear Charlie Kirk over and over and over and over and over and over again.
Yep.
How can that not, if you don't like the person that you're listening to, not get in your head and just build up that hatred?
Well,
you know what I mean? You have where in pre-social media, we did not have that.
He wouldn't have not have access to it. But Charlie wouldn't have also had access to, like, it wouldn't have happened either.
Right.
Like, he wouldn't have been there.
It's a yin and a yang. Exactly.
I think there's something else that may be more sinister going on. And this is on the fault of the mainstream media. I'll just give it to him because... and maybe social media, people created avatars out of, and they, not just Charlie, but they do it with Trump. They do it with the people they disagree with. You create an avatar. He's a Nazi.
Right.
He's horrible. He is, he's not human. So you dehumanize people. Mm-hmm. And that is designed to create hate. Now online and social media might be designed to create likes and comments.
Right.
And then money.
Yes.
And ego. And whatever, and maybe that's what got to this guy.
And that's a little bit of the social media aspect of it too. Is that, you know, you don't get monetized, you don't get exposure unless you're just poking the bear.
You got to poke the bear.
You got to really be antagonistic and yelling and the fighting and the screaming. That's what gets views. But
interestingly, I happen to have watched lots of Charlie Kirk stuff. And, you know, what's interesting is a lot more lately. I watched him. I'm no expert on Charlie Kirk, and there are people
who are,
and there were people who are very close to him, but I'll just give my thoughts on it. You know, I'm not shy about my bent on where I stand on my faith, on where I stand on where the country is, et cetera. That's why we do the show. We want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I've watched, even in the last six, eight, maybe, or like 3 months, maybe last two or three months, I've felt a lot more drawn to what Kirk was doing and what he was saying. And I thought he had sort of really, really, gelled, maybe is the right word. Like he was good. You know, it wasn't bubblegummy. It was, there was depth to it. It wasn't,
he was good as in like the Rush Limbaugh good.
Yeah.
And that it formulated a thought and spoke it eloquently and directly and to the point.
And beyond that, when he talked to kids, when he talked to even whoever he debated, it was always respectful. And I watched that, and I watched him sort of give his viewpoint on things. I watched him listen to others' viewpoints on things. And one in particular, there was, I don't remember the nuance, but he was talking to a college kid or maybe even a college professor about gun issues. And he actually said a few times, Kirk, that is, look, you've got a point there. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
And what he never said was, you're a horrible, no good, rotten bastard.
Right.
How dare you have such a stupid idea?
I've seen videos he make that same comment. You've got a good point there. You've got it. That is a good debater.
That's a guy who conceded ground when it well, you know what it reflected? His interest in getting to the truth.
Right.
That's what that reflected. Right. And it was a genuine interest in getting to the truth.
Right. That respecting the person across from you at the table, knowing that you come from a different journey to think that and to understand that. And I, you know, working with you two here on Common Sense Ohio has really opened my eyes to that over the past couple of years of just truly understanding and maybe just maturing as well too, but just shut up and listen.
Sometimes you got to listen. And I think on social media, Stephen King, I'll just talk about him. He sent a tweet out. Well, he did call for the stoning of gays after all. That was his tweet. And it's funny because I had listened to that. There was a debate where somebody was sort of asking him about stoning people, some biblical reference or something. And Kirk, it's not only that he didn't say what King quoted him as saying, is that he rejected what King was quoted him as. Like, he specifically rejected it. And then there's...
So what Stephen King projected out was a bit, a short that came out, and he didn't know the pre and the post of that short.
And it wasn't even anything as Kirk had said. It was maybe something somebody else had said.
I'm tired of people doing that as well, too.
So start stacking that up. You stack that up over how many retweets, and maybe not just King's tweet, because that was afterwards, but before. So Charlie Kirk hates trans people. Charlie Kirk torches trans people. Charlie Kirk, but you know, he never said that. And if you go listen to his debates, he would not. He would give you a common sense discussion about what he felt about it. Mm-hmm. But and he would give you a common sense. He would tell you that, look, I believe that there's a man and I believe that there's a woman, and that's how we're all made. And I think it's very dangerous to give people hormones, and we need to rethink our strategy on this. This is becoming very like he would say all those things, and then people would say, well, you know, you criticize us for being gay, and you judge. And Kirk was always very clear. I'm not judging you for that. In fact, there's plenty of documented. The one thing is most everything he did was documented,
right?
Because of this day and age. And
yeah,
you know, I saw him talking to a kid at one of his events, and the kid was like, the kid's message was, how dare you let or embrace gay people into this conservative movement that's contrary to the Bible, blah, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And Kirk was like, look, he couldn't have shouted or taken a more opposite position than what that kid was saying, saying, look, we embrace everybody into this movement and we're not going to judge. It's not my job to judge. Now, he would call out the biblical references to that in the Bible, but say, look, I'm telling you what the Bible says about it. And I can disagree with your lifestyle, but it doesn't mean I don't love you. And it doesn't mean that you're not welcome. And that was his message. And that was his message to just about anybody. Yet it was misinterpreted and misstated, I think somewhat intentionally, in order to drive.
For sure. For sure.
Comment, well, debate, or.
Yeah. And I think this is a great opportunity. And again, I'm not a Charlie Kirk follower. I've watched a few of his videos and was interested. It's like, well, that's from the point of view of how someone expresses themselves and what he brought to the table. And I think it's worthy, if you've never watched anything long form of him, catch a video of him being at a university and talking to the kids.
Watch the whole thing.
Yeah. Watch the whole thing. And then also find one where he debates someone in a round table, you know, I don't know what those situations were.
He's got a few of those.
You know, that's kind of a timetable kind of thing, walk around.
Yep.
And just kind of watch those so you get the full amount. And I don't mean it's going to sway you that you're going to become a Charlie Kirk fan. I don't mean that at all. But I think before you start casting stones at him or anybody that gets killed like this, left or right, take a few moments to understand and listen to and watch what they've done. His, versus the memes, versus the shorts, yes, taken out of context, because you may be—
Or not even taken, just summarized, right, out of context.
You may be sharing, you may be commenting on something you have absolutely no knowledge about, and you're going to sound stupid.
And it's, I have yet to find anything of Charlie Kirk. Now look, am I the aficionado of everything he's ever done online? Of course not. But everything I have seen, and I've looked in the last week, I've been very, you know, this has hit me very personally. I don't know why. It just has. I've tried and tried and tried to find something where he was cruel, mean, vicious, insightful. I haven't found any of it.
I haven't either, but I haven't gone digging in. So, and I was not a follower of his either, but yep, it just, you know, ultimately we now know more about him because of this.
He was accused of being a racist. Which is absurd. That's become its own avatar. He was accused of being hateful, and that's just, it's all nonsense. Accused of being a white supremacist over and over and over. Yeah. And it's like, it's complete nonsense. Yeah. He wasn't a white supremacist. He wasn't a racist. He wasn't hateful. In fact, the opposite is true. And I think in his memory, there's lots of good stuff happening, I suppose, in his memory. But for me personally, and I think for my faith, I'm seeing lots more people sort of emerging and saying, you know what, he did it. I'm going to do it too. I'm going to proclaim my faith. I'm not going to be shy about it anymore. And I'm going to step out and say, here, I'm a Christian and I'm proud of it. And I'm going to proclaim it. And that's what he did more than anything, you know, that's what he did.
All right.
But look, there's like I said, there's lots of commentators on this.
For sure. Yeah, and probably commentators that probably jumped on the mic way too soon.
Yep.
Way too soon. Well,
and we're going to talk about that, this sort of cancel culture in reverse. I want to talk about that. But there's one more thing I want to add to this sort of avatar theory is like the language we're using now. I saw this, I forget who did it, and it was a Charlie Kirk supporter, of I think a famous one, but I can't remember, but used the word unalive. Since they unalived Charlie, even that to me, that kind of language, it attenuates the crime of murder, the sin of murder. Like, you know, it's like,
I don't even know what is that. What is that?
Killed. I made you unalive. I killed you.
Really? Okay. I've not
so
heard that.
He got unalived, and it's like,
oh wow.
Think what that does. He was freaking murdered in cold blood on essentially national TV. I'm not going to call it TV, but streamed nationally.
Right.
In front of his two children and his wife and a couple thousand people there and thousands watching. It's like, that's not unalived. He was murdered. He was assassinated.
Right.
And you know, that language is so platonic. It almost itself is an avatar to say somebody got unalived.
Almost like zombie-ish or something. It's weird. Like, what a term.
No, he was killed.
Yeah.
They killed him. Or right. He killed him. This guy killed him.
Right.
So I'm not...
Oh, wow.
It just is... watch your language, I guess. You know? And let's not fall into step with this, because that's what some people are saying. Unalived, it makes it sound less impactful, and it's not less impactful.
Not really, no. It's like... You know, you can't use the N-word, but me just saying that, you know what word I mean.
That's right. Unalive. No, he was murdered, right? He was murdered.
Oh, my gosh.
And tell his wife he was unalive.
Exactly.
Tell his daughter that he was unalive. His kids, go say that.
Yeah. That the kid, you know, his kids are now unfathered.
Because, unfathered, or, I guess, right? That's right. It's like sort of saying, like, people with a uterus. It's like, I just can't, the changing of the language to promote your cause is, it leads to crap like this.
Yeah.
Because it desensitizes and makes it less personal to kill somebody.
Right.
It makes it less personal to pull the trigger in a scope on somebody who is an avatar for hate, because that's what you've been told. That's what you've, your movement says.
Yeah.
And instead, look at people as Charlie Kirk would have looked at people, as individuals.
And did they say unalive to... the Democrat, any Democrats that have been shot and killed?
No, of course not.
Of course not. You know, so right, why is it not. Now you're going to use that term?
And just, I think people do it almost, it's become sort of a mainstream. So watch your language, folks. That's it. Now, in the immediate wake of this, we see reactions. Mm-hmm. And in law, we call this, I'll use the term excited utterance. There's, generally speaking, I'll give a little legal lesson. There's, in a courtroom, everybody's heard hearsay. Objection, that's hearsay. Mm-hmm. You can't use that in court. But there, one of the exceptions to the rule against hearsay is that if people make a statement in the excitement, in the stress of the event that they've just observed, just watched or witnessed, then that's considered reliable enough that it's an exception to the hearsay rule. You know, so if you see a car crash, you're like, holy crap, did you see that car? He just ran the red light. You're still under the stress of it. So the idea in law, going way back in common law, is that that's reliable. You wouldn't think, in other words, there's not a contemplative time to lie. You wouldn't have time to fabricate something.
Well, it's a photograph of the moment.
That's right.
Of you, what you just said out loud.
It's called an excited utterance.
You didn't have time to rethink it, going, well, maybe, did he really run it? No, you know.
Right.
You saw it, you said it out loud.
And you didn't have time to fabricate a story to fit what you think it should be later.
Yeah, right.
Because lies, you know, and look, is this always true? No, but we've created that exception. We have recognized that exception, and there's always exceptions to the exception, which logically gets you back to the rule. Nonetheless, I saw a lot of excited utterances in the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination. And, you know, in the main, the people that I follow and watch were all saying, this is the most horrific thing they've ever seen. I can't believe it. My first reaction was, what are his kids going to do? And I've experienced loss of a very dear friend. And my first reaction then was, like your first reaction is always denial. And that is true, actually. When I saw this and I heard about it, my son texted me and I was in my conference room working on a case. And he said, Charlie Kirk was shot. You know what my first reaction was? Well, he'll be okay.
Well, I think that of everyone.
He'll be okay.
That gets shot, exactly. Like,
wow, that's a huge political significance, but he'll be okay. He's not going to die.
Right.
And then somebody showed me the video, which is one of the most horrific things. And look, I've seen some pretty gory stuff in my day because of what I do. This was bad.
Yeah.
And I saw that, and then intuitively, I knew you don't survive that. I knew he was probably dead on arrival. He probably died as he hit the floor.
I would have thought,
And yet I still thought, they can probably do something. He'll be okay. It's that denial that we have. But then immediately I got to thinking, I was telling my staff upstairs, like, you don't survive that.
Yeah.
You don't. And you start thinking about, oh my gosh, his wife, his children. My first reaction was not anything other than that pain for his loved ones.
Yeah. And even those that were very close and have video of it.
Yeah.
Close video.
It's
brutal. Experienced it 2, 3, 5, 10 rows back and they were intent on him and see that.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
You don't unsee that. You don't unsee it, yeah.
And, you know, then the reactions start coming. The posts, like praying, nothing but, you would think, most of it was what you would expect. But then there's this other side that celebrated it. And there are plenty of videos. You folks know who you are. There's plenty of videos, and they're getting called out. But there's plenty of videos like he deserved it. Just desserts, sorry, not so sorry. You know, it's almost gross to repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks are excited utterances because that's how those people felt about it.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent there's a peer, you're seeking some peer support for that, for those kind of opinions too. Like see, you know, whatever it is, or maybe some people are trying to make a splash, but in the excitement of this horrific assassination, you see folks celebrating it. All right. What do you do with that? It's reprehensible on every level.
It's
inhumane.
Right. It's just as big as pause as seeing him shot.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't even know what to react to it.
Yeah. And
just, you would say that?
So you get like the immediate celebrations. Yay, he's dead. Ding dong. They killed him. I've seen it all. And it's awful. And then you get the, this is horrible for his wife and family. But, you know, he did spew hatred and blah, 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 as if to say he deserved it. And even there's a Matt Dowdy over at MSNBC. Like people got fired. Like newscasters got fired for their comments on this. And I think it's both, you know, like both of those are equally bad.
Mm-hmm.
because what you're doing is you're like, the first is like celebrating it. That's that might be worse. I don't want to say equally bad, but then the second is more of a subtle, like, but he deserved it because of what he was saying.
That's mind-boggling in itself, too.
That means you and I are targets.
Exactly.
Now, look, am I as famous as Charlie Kirk? And nobody, who's targeting me? I mean, I'm not that important.
But all we have to do is tick off one person.
One lunatic.
That just, like, that guy's an a-hole. And I'm done with this. I don't want him on this, you know, for the very few people that watch what we have. We have more listeners than watchers, but it's like, all it takes is one.
Yeah, just one. And then you go back and you start watching how the mainstream media has portrayed him, how people that didn't like him portrayed him. And it's where we started, right? When we started, it's like horrible, spews hate, racist, white supremacist, anti-gay, whatever it is. Even a very good friend of mine said, look, you know, I'd never, like, his stance, his extreme stances on gay and lesbian and trans sort of bothered him. And I'm not going to call this person out, but I know that he hasn't watched any of it. Like, he doesn't know what Charlie Kirk was saying about those things. And if he did, he probably would agree. Because Charlie would say, look, I'm not going to tell you what to do in your bedroom.
Right. I've heard that quote. That's exactly, I've heard that. Know, yes.
But I'm, you know, he would say, look, I disagree that men can be women and women can be men. All right. You can at least disagree, but that's hardly extreme.
Mm-hmm.
At least 5 years ago, it was not extreme.
Yeah.
So it's hardly extreme to say that. And, but the problem ultimately is that when it's called out like that, you create the avatar and people start celebrating it. Now the question is, what the irony of this is, I'm calling it cancel culture in reverse, but it's not quite cancel culture, but I want to kick this around because you brought up something J.D. Vance said, about, you know, call your employers or call these people's employers.
Yeah, because he was on
Charlie's podcast.
Yeah, and said something to the effect, I'm going to butcher what he said, but basically if you hear someone say, and you know, at your office, anything against Charlie Kirk or, you know, the stance, like, call him out.
Call him
out.
Get
him fired. Yeah. Get him fired.
Yeah. So look, let's chop this up a little bit, because 5-6 years ago, 10 years ago, in the last decade maybe, this cancel culture emerged. Mm-hmm. And cancel culture, from my perspective, was, look, if you say anything that would be considered a Republican platform or a conservative platform, then there are forces on the other side that would get you canceled. If you didn't support Black Lives Matter, you get canceled. That means if you're an actor and you came out on behalf of Donald Trump, or if you expressed that you're a conservative and disagreed with some of the left agenda, then you would get fired from your job. You couldn't get a job as a writer. You couldn't get a job as a director. You couldn't get a job doing anything in Hollywood whatsoever. Andrew Klavan, one of my, I follow him quite a bit and agree with him on almost everything. He talks about this, how he was a conservative writer and made a choice at some point in his career. I'm just not going to get the mainstream jobs as a screenwriter anymore. I'm going to come out. But it was important to him to say his piece. Mm-hmm. So he was effectively canceled in the mainstream. And then it sort of trickled down during, at some point in the mix of COVID or somewhere, a lot of people were canceled for saying, I don't support the vaccine, or I don't support, you know, people were getting canceled for all sorts of things, shouted down. If I went into court and said, look, I don't believe in masks, people would, I remember arguing with people, but I don't care about cancel. It's like, you can't cancel me because I don't care.
Yeah.
But there was all that fear. But cancel culture, different than what Vance was talking about, I think, was having an opinion.
Right.
And somewhere, this is where I want to chop up with you a little bit, because somewhere along the line, having an opinion about something politically, like I support Donald Trump, or I'm conservative, or maybe I support Hillary Clinton and I'm not conservative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, all right, it's one thing to get fired from your job if you have a different political stance than your employer. So you could say, now, an employer could also say, we'll get to what the employer's position on some of this stuff might be. But somewhere, maybe it's a matter of degree. I think we should sort it out a little bit. When you celebrate this cold-blooded murder, that to me feels different.
Yeah. It could be looked at as, oh, there was the warning sign. He was celebrating or she was celebrating it, and then that person actually does something down the road.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So
that's what came to my mind when you said something about that. It's like, oh, wait a minute. We got to connect the dots here, that if they're celebrating and they're going to the extreme of celebrating a death, there's something wrong with them. there's and there something should be, wrong. Maybe there is something to be called out about it.
It's this idea, you know, maybe it's deeper.
Maybe.
We're in a culture. No, I think you're absolutely right, but I think there's more to it also. We're in this culture of likes and shares.
Mm-hmm.
And what that really is like, if you go back to old school psychology, you're externalizing your being, you know, your happiness in the world. I hate to use the word happiness, but your contentness in the world.
But it is happiness. Yeah.
Your contentness is based upon what other people think of you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to any old fashioned, like 10 years ago, psychologist, maybe even a little longer, they're going to say that's horrible. And they're going to ask you a specific, how can you control that?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a way you can try to control it. You can try to act like people want you to act, but then you never act on who you are
yeah.
and what you really feel. But maybe there's something that, maybe this is an extension of that. So there's these people who are celebrating this. They live in this sort of cyber world or ether world of finding support from people that don't exist or exist as avatars on their own screen.
Right.
You go for it. Like, agree, do it. And this will dovetail later into some of the additional investigative stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. So if you're finding your self-worth that way, then it becomes really easy to cheer, particularly, I think, maybe on the fringes, you know, and by fringes, I mean here, you know, on the fringes of people who would celebrate the death of another human. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to find in a smaller group like that more support, and then you can become something. You can be part of something. You can be part of that group, whatever that group is, and you can find what we'll call identity there.
Right. Right.
And, right. You know, I think that what you just said there sort of triggered that thought is that you've got this, you can find identity in the cover of other people that think in these extremes.
Right.
So,
which is the definition of a cult.
Yep. And to a certain degree. It is the definition of a cult.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a quote from a book called Ordinary Men. I'm not going to go into the book, but people who know it. It was a psychologist who said, moral unburdening was found in the collective identity, or something like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And moral unburdening was found in the collective identity. So when you go... you unburden yourself of individual morals to get external validation from others. And maybe that's what's going on, yeah. You know? So,
and when I say that too, I mean from both a conservative and a liberal standpoint too, that there are cults on both sides of this. That
might be.
To your definition of wanting to lose themselves.
People that lose themselves. You know, but I will say this, yeah. And I'll push back on this. I'm seeing this more and more on these left agenda items.
It certainly is getting more spotlight. Let's put it that way. Because I have a feeling it's going both ways. I don't have examples, but every yin has its yang.
Tell you the difference, though, that I have seen. Because I got this argument from another person. He said, well, look, you know, you didn't see, where were all these conservatives when the two senators, was it Minnesota?
Minnesota. Oh, gosh,
were shot, yes. And those were horrible killings.
Yeah, they were, and sad that we're Minnesota. Yes, yes, yes.
And you know, where were they then? Where were they when Shapiro's house burned down? Where were they when, Pelosi's house was broken into? There's a couple differences. First of all, those people were hardly associated with the Republican Party, at least outwardly. I mean, at least the Pelosi thing. Mm-hmm. I believe that. That guy might have been wearing a rainbow flag and a Black Lives Matter shirt. I don't know. Whatever it is.
I don't remember. Yeah.
I think the Shapiro thing in Pennsylvania was probably motivated maybe by his stance on Israel, which a little bit different faction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the senator, like I think the guy who committed those murders in Minnesota was saying, well, Tim Walz. These people were lunatics. They weren't mainstream in any of the Republican Party. And I will tell you this, what Charlie Kirk would have been doing when he heard about those things. He'd been praying for the people. And I'll tell you what he wouldn't have been doing. And I'll tell you what no conservative that I know was doing. They weren't celebrating it. They weren't saying that those people deserved it.
I certainly didn't see that.
And there's a huge difference between, like, even at its rudimentary point that this person was trying to make, there's a huge difference between not coming out and putting yourself on Front Street and speaking about it openly and then openly celebrating it. Mm-hmm. Right. Those are two different things. Mm-hmm. So what we have here are people that are openly celebrating Charlie Kirk's assassination. That's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not the same. It's not the same. So, you know, and JD, now we get back to what JD Vance was saying, like, yeah, call it out. It's an interesting point. Cause if you're an employer, what do you do with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think you bring up a good point, you know, to reiterate that extreme of like the celebrations. Like, yeah, as an employee, you probably should, you know, as an employee, fellow employee to the employer. But at the same time, I don't know, as an employer myself, I don't have employees, but I have, you know, subcontractors. They do represent my company. So yep. I have to watch what they do. I have to watch who I hire.
Yep.
I don't do a social media dive into who they are. I don't do any of that. But it's that. But when it comes up, it's something I guess you do have to consider.
Yeah, right, because it affects your bottom line.
It does.
Your bottom line. So,
but you know, it has somewhat of a. Then I, you know, my mind kind of goes to, well, if someone just spoke their mind on a low level, just spoke their about it, is it cause for firing?
No, it's not. I think what is not caused for firing.
They've lost their job. They've lost their income to support their family. I mean, it's a trickle effect.
It's a huge punishment.
Again, it's a judgment call. I get that. It's not an easy answer.
I think it's an answer. So there's two. There's a couple different questions we're talking about. One, JD Vance making the comment or making the call out. Mm-hmm. Two, employers who learn of this stuff, mm-hmm, what do they do with it?
Yeah.
And I think, first of all, the government can't tell the employers what to do. At least not on the, we'll talk about private employees. They can't, mm-hmm, really say, look, you can't fire somebody for doing this, right, because, you know, most of the time people are employees at will, and they can be fired for this. You can be fired for this kind of stuff. Right. And if I had a legal associate who was out there screaming and hollering and celebrating Charlie Kirk's murder on social media, when I have clients who know that person, guess what, dude? You're fired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You're,
yeah,
fired.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the same if I had an employee out celebrating the murder of the two folks in Minnesota.
For sure.
You're fired.
Yeah.
You don't get to celebrate,
right,
that.
Right.
If I had, yeah, an employee who said, I support Kamala Harris, I have a harder time firing somebody for that. You know, that's a different story. I don't even think it's a matter of degree. I think it's a completely different stratosphere.
That is, yes, correct, correct.
So a political position on a topic is one thing. A celebration of somebody's cold-blooded murder is quite the other. So this isn't cancel culture to me. This isn't, mm-hmm, what cancel culture was. And, you know, those would say, look, you guys created the rules on cancel culture. We're just doing the same thing. That would be the, oh, sort of like what's good for Peter is good for Paul, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's quite that. I think they're, yeah, two different things.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Generally speaking.
Right, right.
Now, Vance calling out. There's a couple things that I want to note here. And even on Donald Trump. So Trump initially, we'll get to Vance in a second, but Trump initially comes out and says, I demand the death penalty, or he wanted the death penalty,
right,
for this guy.
Right.
Right now, the way I see this, this is a state court case.
Okay.
And if I am President Trump's advisor, now this is emotional, I get it, because this was a friend of Donald Trump's.
Right.
So,
right.
But in the main, that office, I think, needs to step back. Say, let the process work.
Mm-hmm.
Let it work. Don't put your thumb on this scale.
Yeah.
Let it work. And then you might say the same about J.D. Vance's comment.
Mm.
Like, look, yeah, let it work. Now, yeah, but we're in this weird age where there's like podcasts and where there's like, mm-hmm, social media, and these politicians now are sort of like rolling up their sleeves and having conversations, mm-hmm, with people. I like it or not like it, both have chimed in a little bit on this stuff. I think I would prefer that everybody, and I don't even disagree with Vance, by the way. The question is whether you should say it or not say it in a podcast setting, right?
Right, right, right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, look, I guess the debate would be, is it appropriate? I don't know if it's appropriate or not. But it would never be not appropriate not to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you never, you know.
Right.
So, on the other hand, he's human and he made the call. So, I remember saying the same thing about Biden when he, now Biden did a little bit more than this during the Chauvin trial, the George Floyd, mm-hmm, killing.
Like, mm-hmm,
Biden was really weighing in on this and sort of taking his own position on it. And that was a little less, well, there were some factual disputes in that case that was a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's our expectations of what a president or vice president and or should be saying at that moment.
Yeah.
I think there is something to that. We want to hear from our political leader. Where do we go from here with this?
Yeah. What would you say?
Right. And, you know, because I Trump's message wasn't very salving, I should say, you know, to calm things down and almost kind of stirred the pot, which I didn't appreciate.
Yeah, there's going to be people that wouldn't have appreciated it.
You know,
I happen to agree with what he said. You know, now, whether that was disarm or, like you said, whether that was a
maybe that was the follow up speech he should have given. Because it should have been. I don't know. I have a different perspective of a leader at that moment in time. It's just that, okay, you need to take a breath. We'll get this taken care of. The shooter's going to be found. We need to.
Everybody pause, take a step back, regroup, pray for the families.
Exactly. And that's all he has to do.
Yeah. That would have been
to me, that's my perspective of what a president should do.
He's a president for everybody.
Yeah. But his next, what he did say could be a second follow up.
You could say
that's
that,
okay.
Or even in the same speech, say first, look, everybody, what we don't want folks is more violence.
Exactly.
What we don't want is more violence.
Exactly.
So anyway, there's going to be some, I'm sure the people that are against Trump are probably looking at that like, you know, buddy.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. So. But he has every right to say what he did say. I was just hoping for a more calming because we needed a calming moment at that point in time.
Sadly, you know, this is a political figure. I mean, this was a good friend of Donald Trump's. It was a political figure.
For sure.
This is a little bit different. This is a very unique scenario.
He was emotionally charged about it, I'm sure.
I'm sure he was. Yeah.
You know, how could you not be? How could you not be?
So now let's talk about Pam Bondi, who comes out, I think, yesterday or maybe the day before and starts talking about there's no place for hate speech. I don't even know what she was trying to say.
I don't either.
If she's trying to say, now look, let's give her the best benefit of the doubt. If she's trying to say the media needs to tone down the rhetoric and not call people Nazis, not create avatars. If that's her message, fine, say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you at this table have heard me rail against this notion of hate speech. I mean, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as hate speech. We have free speech, and it's either free speech that's protected under the First Amendment, or it's not free speech that's not protected under the First Amendment, right? Hate speech. There's no qualification, no classification, no legal authority, no precedent out of the United States Supreme Court that says, by the way, we get to regulate hate speech. And this is coming from the Department of Justice, the highest department in the government. So what I don't want, and I think almost everybody, certainly the other side or the other political side would agree, is that we don't want the government cracking down on what it deems hate speech. This is what Biden did. And I went nuts about it. It's what he was doing to Squelch podcast. He was putting his weight on the scale of social media sites like Twitter and Facebook. This is not what we want, folks. We don't want the federal government deeming something hate speech. Now, if she wants to come out and say, look, we can't prosecute you for saying these things, media, but why don't you take a look in the mirror and tone down your rhetoric a little bit? Because when you're calling the president of the United States a Nazi, when you're using that terminology, what are you really saying when Hakeem Jeffries is going into Congress with a baseball bat and saying we need to go out in the streets and fight? Yeah. What are you really saying? You know, it's like, I don't have any problem calling that stuff out, but prosecuting it?
There are, we've talked about this too as well, is that, you know, there are other pressures that the government can put on a YouTube of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to say, let's start taking down everything that has this kind of mention in it.
Well, that's right.
We've been affected by that.
We have.
And we are pretty much, yes, we're conservative in what we're doing, but I mean, we have a discussion about things and we're just labeled because we say certain words.
If we talk about certain things,
there's no context to what we say. We're throttled because of the words, not the context.
And if the Trump government is going to engage in that, just like the Biden government engaged in it, I hate it just the same.
Yes.
I hate it just
and the same. And that stuff can – she can say this, and then the next week or so, all of a sudden have conversations with, hey, YouTube, do this. Hey, Facebook, do this.
Yeah, do this, or you're not going to get the funding, or
we're going to change legislation.
Tweak the regulation just
a
little bit.
Exactly.
And next thing you know, the other side's getting throttled the same.
Yep.
Now, what – if Facebook, YouTube, if these things want to do it on their own, I suppose, you know, then they're engaged in their own content based censorship.
Right.
And at least then you know what's going on. But as soon as the government gets involved, mm-hmm. now we have a First Amendment problem.
Right.
Now it's trouble.
Yeah. And thank goodness podcasting will always be free. We'll always be able to say what we want. Put it on our RSS feed. We may not be on a video, but we'll be on a podcast at least. So yeah.
you know, people may not hear it, but at least we'll be able to say it.
Right, exactly.
Be able to say it. So let's spend a few minutes talking about, last night, I listened to a press conference, the county prosecutor in Utah County, okay. who's going to be prosecuting this guy, the killer.
It is in that county of that university, so it's local.
Yeah.
Is it local? Okay, yeah. It'll go right there. All right.
Now, at least for now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about the legal procedure, which break this down a little mm-hmm. bit. So the first thing that happened is this guy was arrested. So the police developed a case. They conducted an arrest. You know, sort of hats off to the kid's father.
And mom, too.
And mom, family.
I think the parents. I just heard about the mom this morning about really getting into the kid's head going, you know, you need to give up.
There's a consequence to this.
Yeah.
An enormous one.
Yeah.
And it's coming.
Yeah.
Wow. But so the kid's arrested. Now, Utah procedure, it's very similar around the country with maybe some tweaks here and there, but I'll just sort of explain how this is going down in Utah. They arrested the kid, and then they have to file charging documents. They have to charge him with a crime. Mm-hmm. And usually that's called a criminal complaint. And that's a sworn statement based on an affidavit from a police authority. And so initially the kid was charged with murder, a bunch of different kinds of murder, some shooting or doing something in front of kids. I mean, a bunch of statutes out of Utah, which are essentially murder crimes. And they included in those charges enough details and facts to support a request that'll come soon for the death penalty. But the initial charge, and then the DA read word for word a probable cause statement. Now you say, what's a probable cause statement? A probable cause statement is the information, the factual allegations that support the criminal charges. And, you know, you heard a bunch of questions after this guy's press conference. Well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And the guy was very careful. The DA was very careful to say, look, I've told you what I can. I've read what I can read. The rest of it is you'll have to wait and see. What we want to do is protect this gentleman's right to a fair trial first and foremost, as well as prosecute him at the same time. You know, so he was very careful about this. But you got a criminal complaint and then an affidavit of probable cause, which is designed to show the court that there is enough information to support the charges. Then yesterday afternoon, the kid had the guy had a initial appearance, and that was done by Zoom. Now, I think the DA was also very careful to say, look, we're not treating him any differently. We always do these by Zoom or by WebEx, whatever they use, in our system. And that's very common these days and age. So, because what happens is if you transport a prisoner from jail to court, think of all the possible things that can go wrong with that, not the least of which is escape, not the worst of which, the worst of which would be his own murder.
Right.
Think Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. Even my son was talking about that. It's funny, not even my son. A younger man was talking to me about this, somebody in their 20s, like, oh yeah, did you know that they actually paraded Lee Harvey Oswald out in the public and somebody shot him? I was like, yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the history.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
welcome to the world, wonderful world of studying history. No. But anyway, they want to avoid that. So this guy appears by WebEx in open court. An initial appearance is a process where the court tells you what you're charged with. And a lot of times the court will read the entirety of the charges out loud. Think there was a time in our country when people couldn't read and write. So you had to explain to them what they were charged with. The idea was people need to know what they're facing. This was not yet a time to enter a guilty plea or a not guilty plea or anything else. Mm-hmm. Here's your charges. Do you understand what the charges are? Yes, I do. And that's basically what happened at the initial appearance. The second half of the initial appearance is typically to address the circumstances surrounding your custody. Somebody can be remain in custody or it's a chance to get bond. Here, under Utah law, there was a death penalty request. So there were death specifications on the case. Mm-hmm. And under local law, under Utah law, that means you're not eligible for bond. So he's held without bail, not getting out.
Okay.
And then they ask the kid if he wants to get a lawyer. So he asked this guy, do you want a lawyer? Yes. Sometimes there's a dialogue about whether you can afford one, whether the court should appoint a lawyer to you. I think he's going to need an appointed lawyer. I don't think he's got funds for it. I think his parents have basically said, we're out. He's appointed a lawyer. Then that's it. So what happens next? Next, there's going to be something called a preliminary hearing. Some jurisdictions have something called a grand jury. Federal court has grand juries. Ohio, we have grand juries where the prosecutor goes and presents cases to a grand jury, which is a closed-door proceeding where grand jurors vote yay or nay on probable cause. He would read that statement, basically, that this prosecuting attorney read and say, is that sufficient probable cause? Grand jurors can ask questions. And if they do agree that there's probable cause, then they return something called a bill of indictment. If there's no grand jury, they call it an information charging somebody with these crimes. And that's what this district attorney has done. But at the preliminary hearing, in Michigan, they would call it a preliminary examination. In Ohio, we call it a preliminary hearing. In federal court, we call it a preliminary hearing. The prosecutor has to present evidence to establish probable cause, not guilt, just enough. So look at it this way. Probable cause is more than 50%. Mm-hmm. Guilt is beyond a reasonable doubt. The preliminary hearing is just a probable cause hearing, just enough evidence to establish there's been an offense. It may be a waivable hearing. I didn't check that under Utah procedure, but you know the defense may waive that hearing for whatever reason. Mm. Probably not, but they could. If there's a probable cause found, and I have no doubt that there will be based on the evidence I heard or read, the next step will be proceed towards trial. In that process, there'll be appointed lawyer. Well, you'll get a lawyer for the preliminary hearings, and then the lawyers will start looking at legal issues to challenge in favor of the defense. What might those be? You've already sort of hinted at one. You asked if this is going to happen in the same county. Mm-hmm. One such motion might be a change of venue. We don't think we can get a fair trial here. We need to move it. I doubt that'll happen, but they could challenge that. Maybe the guy made statements to the police that were not subject to Miranda. I'm just telling you the kind of motions that would be filed. Mm-hmm. So we're going to move to exclude these statements from use of court. Maybe there were search warrants executed, but they weren't based on probable cause. We actually did a breakdown in another show about this. You would exclude that evidence from use. Those pretrial motions will happen. The case gets scheduled for trial. It'll go to trial. It'll be a long time, though. It'll be months and months, next year sometime, probably.
You know, and I want to bring this up because I think I heard President Trump mention about fast-laning these types of trials.
Yeah, you can't do that.
That bothered me a lot when he said that. And again, that's just my knowledge of working with you and what you've done with Lawyer Talk and the podcast and going, whoa.
Here's how this works. And the district attorney was actually very good about this. He mentioned what the rights were. You have a right to a jury trial where you're presumed to be innocent, where the prosecutor has to prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt. You have a right to a speedy and public trial. Now, the defendant has that right. The government doesn't have that right. The defendant has a right to a speedy and public trial. And at the trial, he gets to cross-examine his accusers, use the subpoena power of the court to bring in witnesses, basically defend the case. But those are the defendant's rights to waive, not the government's. And the government doesn't have a right to a speedy trial. The defendant does, which means the defendant can waive it. So that sort of asks the next question, which is, well, he can't waive it forever. So what we run into is this. I was in an arraignment on a nasty case yesterday. And the magistrate in charge of the proceedings was saying, when are we going to try the case? And they were starting to talk in like a month out. And I'm like, whoa. First of all, I've got a whole calendar here. I've got a schedule. In fact, I'm out of town for the month that you're talking about for 2 weeks. I can't do it. So that's too speedy. So you can't fast track it like that. On the other hand, if I stood up and said I need it in a year and a half, the judge would be like, look, sorry. You know, file your motions, tell me what time you need and why you need it, and we'll consider it. But you can't just say a year and a half away. somewhere, you know, there's got to be some reasonable thing. So what likely happens here is the prosecutor is going to give the defense something called discovery. And discovery will include witness statements, results of test and examination, here think DNA, ballistics examinations, so shooting stuff, any other scientific workup that was done. Cell phone evidence is going to be thousands and thousands of pages. So they're going to do cell phone dumps of lots of people for text messaging, communication, location services. So they're going to get a search warrant for this guy's phone. And if location services were on, they're going to put him at various places, GPS or through tower analysis. There's a lot of stuff that's going to happen. If you're defending this case, you have to make a choice. Do I need my own expert? Yes, the court to appoint experts and pay for them for us. Your own DNA expert, your own cell phone expert, your own sometimes a false confession expert, whatever it would be, the defense is entitled to get those things, and that takes time. Yeah. Trump can't just say fast track it. So look, I run into this all the time, and this is apolitical. If you're on the victim side of a crime, you want fast justice. If your son is being accused of a crime, you don't necessarily want fast justice. You want to make sure
you want justice.
You want justice, yeah. And you want to make sure the defense has time and things are done correctly. Yeah. Mm. The system has to meet in the middle. That's why we call it an adversarial system. Nobody gets their full way. So, this district attorney was very careful to say, we want to make sure he gets a fair trial, and we want to make sure we prove him guilty and get our measure of punishment.
I want to go back to your he'll get a court-appointed defense attorney. What if no one will want to do this?
It's a great question.
Oh, my. I mean, and it has nothing to do with the politics of it. It's like, I don't want to be a part of this.
That's a great question. So I get this all the time. You know, how do you represent those horrible, rotten, no good people? And it was like, look, if I don't do it, the system doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's the first message. So, you know, I had an exchange in comments in my Lawyer Talk podcast where somebody was sort of criticizing me for my stance on the Mangione murder. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, I was talking about how factually it's pretty obvious that he's guilty of murder.
Right.
And I was like, how dare you call out? I was like, look, there's two different things here. I can defend somebody who looks factually guilty, and I can also have an opinion that he is factually guilty. Mm-hmm. Those are two different things. Now, the question is, the government has to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt, and the DA already knows and wants to do it the correct way. That's what makes our system work. Now, who's going to represent him? Let's just say I got a phone call, ring-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling, we need you to come represent this guy. I have to first assess, you know, look, as far as causes go, I'm not a cause lawyer. I represent clients, not causes. And I think that's an important distinction. Yeah. There are cause lawyers out there. I think Southern Poverty Law Clinic, they're out there. I'm not one of them. I do this for a job. And I think that's important for me anyway to keep it separate. Here's my job. Here's my opinion. There are times when I can't separate those. And there are going to be lawyers out there who can't separate those. And those lawyers shouldn't take the case. So if somebody calls me and says, will you do this? I'd have trouble with it. I'm not going to lie about it. I have trouble with it because this bothers me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother everybody, but it bothers me. So really the question is, would I then, hypothetically speaking, be the best lawyer to give this guy a fair trial? Probably not.
Yeah.
There are lawyers I know who would. And it's not that they support what he did. In fact, quite the opposite.
Yeah.
And there are cases I've done that are reprehensible people who have done horrible, horrible things. And I might even be able to get my head around separating these two things. But why should I have to go through that mental exercise when somebody else wouldn't?
Right. It just seems like that may be one of the toughest jobs that's going to be out
there. Very difficult, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be chastised. You're going to be criticized. And now, that doesn't mean I can't talk about what I would do. Mm-hmm. But I think this is important. This is, I think, what you can expect from his defense team. Yeah. In order to prove the death penalty, so look, you have two issues here at trial. One, can the prosecutor prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this guy committed the crime of murder in the way they've charged it? The second phase, if yes, is should he live or die? Are we going to impose a death penalty? The first phase, it looks like the evidence is pretty solid. We'll see that they have to bring it into a courtroom and prove it. Mm-hmm. They've got confessions to his parents. They've got text messaging that are very incriminating if all this stuff is to be believed.
Seems like the FBI did their job in finding stuff too.
They got evidence that ties him to it. They've got his DNA on the trigger of the gun that used it. I mean, I get it. There's some quote conspiracy theories out there about it couldn't have happened because of it. Maybe, we'll see. But right now, it seems pretty solid. But over here, the question is, on the death penalty side, what can we do there? It's a separate trial. The jury has to first find him guilty and then decide beyond a reasonable doubt whether he should live or die. And there are mitigating factors. What motivated it? What's his prior record? What redeeming value does he have? The nature of the crime? There's lots of factors that go into that. It seems to me in these death penalty cases, that's where the defense is going to be focusing, because there's a lot of people that do this for the cause of fighting death penalty cases. And you can dig in and say, look, it's a reprehensible act, but I still believe in this cause that you shouldn't kill this kid. And there's lots of opinions on this, on whether he should live or die, whether it's redeeming or not redeeming. There's people that would say, look, death penalty or not, it'd be worse for him to spend the rest of his life in prison. Maybe. I don't know. Whatever your take is, your take is.
Yeah.
It just, we've done a show on the death penalty once here. But it's all, that's where the defense is going to be looking. I would first immediately get him psychologically evaluated, figure out what makes my client tick.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, and this is what I hinted at talking about later, you have a situation here where it looks to be that this guy was involved in chat with others beforehand. If not bragging about going to do it or talking about going to do it, and then there's some really, really sort of foreshadowy, scary messaging out there on Discord that I heard. I just heard it. I don't know if I haven't read it yet. I don't see any evidence, but that I've heard that suggest that something was going to happen to Charlie Kirk on this date at this time. And so, you know, does that make these other people co-conspirators in the murder? Are there others involved? I don't know yet. But if I'm defending this guy, I'm going to first establish a rapport. Make sure my client knows that I'm on his side. I'm going to spend some time talking to him, getting to know him, figuring out what makes him tick. Get a psychological evaluation. And then in short order, I'm going to be talking about what the heck happened here, who else knew, what's going on. Because you're going to be saying, look, dude, you want to try to cut a deal. Do you want to try to avoid the death penalty? I don't think there's any chance. There may not be a chance. The prosecutor may say there's no chance. The death penalty's on the table no matter what. But if this guy came in and said, look, there are others involved. Here's who they are. Here's how this went down, and supplied information, he might get a deal. They might take death off the table in exchange for that kind of cooperation. I don't know, but that don't be surprised.
Yeah.
It happens.
It's not cut and dry.
It happens. So that's what we can expect. And the defense team, are they really going to want to? You're going to find people that will do it because they are able to say, look, I do this for the system, not necessarily the client.
Yeah.
I do this because if I don't, then the system fails. And if there's ever a need for this guy to have good representation, it is right now.
Sure.
It is right now. And, you know, those would say fry him, hang him. I'm not even disagreeing with that. But you can't just do that without first making sure the system works, because these are the cases, folks. These are the cases where the system is willing to throw out the protections and skip right to the end. And you cannot do that. And hats off to this district attorney for out front. Before even, you know, before the case even really starts, he's talking about that. And there are too many grandstanding prosecutors that wouldn't. This one did. So it sounds like the case is in good hands.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Good. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see. Exactly.
I mean, look,
This
is, I know we spent the whole time talking about Charlie Kirk. I don't feel like doing anything good or bad today.
No.
It's all bad.
Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. We needed it for catharsis, I guess you could say, too. I mean, I guess everybody that has a mic has been doing that. So, you know, thank you for putting up with us for the last hour of just talking about that. But we also wanted to bring some insight
from
your perspective. You know,
I hope it's helpful.
I don't think anybody's been talking about, okay, what's the process now?
Yep.
What's the process? And I think that's important to know. It's going to be a slow ride.
It's
a good thing.
It's got to be a slow ride.
It's a good thing, though.
It's got to be. Now, there are times, I guess, one other point. There are times when the defendant would just say, look, I don't care. I'm pleading guilty. Kill me. It happens. And that may happen here. But anyway, if you've got comments or questions about this, if you want to hear some more legal stuff about it, I know it's difficult, particularly if you're feeling the same kind of pain that I'm feeling about Charlie Kirk and his family and his poor children and, you know, the travesty of it all. It really does shake your, it shakes my faith to its foundations, but then gives me hope because of what I've seen as a result across the world, Christian vigils about it. So look, we're all praying for Charlie Kirk. We're praying for his family. I'm really praying for the country. But this has been Common Sense Ohio. If you got your comments, commonsenseohioshow.com. Send us a question and we'll try to cover it here. We are coming at you right from the middle here in Ohio.